Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again. Unbelievable. Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake. A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe it myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
37th episode. And unfortunately, Mike's not here this week. He's still crying about Anthony Joshua. Oh, actually, no, he's right there. How's it going, Mike?
Here I am.
Oh, he was gone for a little bit, and I didn't think he was going to show up to the studio today. And I just assumed that he was still depressed and encountering some sadness because of his countryman, Anthony Joshua. Are you over it now?
I'm American now.
You're American now? You're American? You've been American for how many years now over here?
I've been over here, 5 years now? So, yeah.
Five-ish years?
Just like one of those soccer fans that just changes shirts, you know, when a team loses, I'm just going to put another one on.
But after the Joshua loss, you're American now?
Mexican-American, to be precise.
Mexican-American, to be precise. So, I hope you get a Snickers deal, just like Andy Ruiz is probably going to do.
I should do with this belly.
But episode 37 of the Last Round Podcast. Once again, and before we continue on the rest of the show, we were supposed to have Ronald Winky Wright on this episode. It feels like some scheduling issues got in the way. So we're hoping that as we're recording this, that he gets back to us. We had confirmed with him, but we don't know. We think there's some scheduling issues, logistics going on. So we're hoping, crossing our fingers, that as we record this, he reaches out and we can get him on the line. But as of right now, we'll just continue on with the show and review this past week's fights. Saturdays at what? Madison Square Garden? 3 weeks in a row? 2 weeks in a row of boxing, right?
Yeah, it's been a busy for the East Coast.
Busy for the East Coast. How come they're taking away all of our fights over here in LA?
Busy for DAZN.
Busy for DAZN. But this, I feel, I don't know, man. I like MSG, you know, but they're taking away our LA fights.
The mecca of boxing.
Okay, let me ask you this before we continue. Is the mecca of boxing Madison Square Garden, or is it the StubHub out here in LA? Oh, I gotcha there. Everybody on social media, you guys got to debate that.
I know. Everyone in the West Coast seems to love the StubHub because there always seems to be, every time there's a fight there, it's always a war.
Hell yeah.
Matisse, Oscar Valdez.
Yeah. But I don't know. That's going to be a debate for a long time, but I think because MSG has the tradition and the history behind it, it's probably going to tip the scales a little bit more. But let's just jump into it. DAZN, this past June 8th, past Saturday night, Gennady Golovkin makes his debut on DAZN as he KOs Steve Rolls in the fourth round and gets his 39th. Victory. Gennady Golovkin hasn't been in the ring since his loss to Canelo. What was that? 9 months ago? Just about?
Yeah, it must be about 9 months ago now.
So, the first few rounds of this fight, Rolls actually got some shots in. But people got to remember that Gennady usually lets you hit him. Do you agree did Rolls catch him, or did Triple G let him get comfortable and then chase him down?
No, I totally agree. That's what I was going to touch on. I think Golovkin actually kind of touched on that in one of the interviews I saw, where he kind of said that, you know, I think he wants fighters to believe they can touch him, you know, so they open up, which
creates, he gives them confidence, yeah.
Yeah, which creates openings for him, you know, to come through, to get forward and, you know, land those big shots.
Well, because that's exactly what he did.
Yeah, I thought he looked good. I thought some of the things you could see with the, you know, obviously this is his first fight under Jonathan Banks. I thought he looked a little bit leaner. I thought he threw more combinations.
He did look leaner. I noticed that too.
He wasn't always just looking for that one big shot. So I thought, you know, it's for his first fight underneath Jonathan Banks, you know, obviously he was fighting, you know, a lesser known name as well. But I thought he looked good. I thought for someone of his age, I thought you could see little, you know, there weren't huge changes. I thought mostly it was just he was throwing multiple punches, more combinations, instead of just doing that the one plodding shot the whole time, you know, which should make it good, hopefully, for the Canelo fight, if it's going to be Canelo 3.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's obviously that's what he's looking for, as he called him out. He's been saying it in interviews. But I think he did obviously what he needed to do to Steve Rolls, you know, stopped him. And Rolls actually got some shots. There was one straight left. It was kind of like a hard jab that snapped Gennady's head back. I think he was going back with the punch, but he got caught just enough where it snapped his head back. And I was like, oh, that was probably Rolls' best punch of the fight. But I think, do you think Rolls had the confidence coming in, especially after watching Andy Ruiz get the win? Because like people were asking him about him. Obviously, as in terms of the betting odds, like Golovkin was the favorite, just like Joshua was. But Ruiz comes in and dethrones Joshua. So I'm sure there was more people who actually watched this fight between Rolls and Golovkin because they saw Ruiz beat Joshua the week before, and they're like, oh, what if it happens again? What if this guy beats Golovkin? You know?
Yeah, I'm sure that probably helped a little bit. And you could tell by his style that he kind of came in and tried to actually take the fight to Golovkin. I don't know whether Golovkin obviously just kind of like you touched on to begin with, you know, just let him build in confidence, you know, to create those openings, which worked in Golovkin's favor. You know, I think you could see quite early on that Golovkin was going to take, you know, was just kind of measuring him and then backed him up onto the ropes like he always did and then hit him with that kind of, I think it's a Golovkin-style punch, really, that kind of corkscrew right hand that he throws.
Oh, yeah, that one that came from, like, it was like a 10 o'clock.
Yeah, it's a very unorthodox kind of...
That was a... I don't think I've ever seen him do that. On the broadcast, they said that he did it to Antonio DeMarco.
Yeah, it was a while since he'd been used.
That was at the StubHub, too. Yeah. Mecca of boxing. We're biased, though. We live in California. But, yeah, that punch, when I was watching it live, I saw him come from, like, I think... If I remember correctly, it looked like he fainted, like it was going to be a straight jab, but like at the last second, he goes up and he does like a corkscrew. So he goes like this and then bam, just gets him like on the forehead. And I was like, what the hell? And I think that was a shot. Actually, I'm pretty sure that was a shot that kind of, you know, disrupted Rolls' rhythm. Because shortly after that is when he knocked him out, right?
Yeah, because did you see he switched to southpaw?
Yeah, I saw
After he connected, switched to southpaw, then kind of hit him with like... a hook.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was definitely a little bit different to his usual stance under Abel Sanchez. I think those little things, you know, bringing back some of the punches he used to do. I think Jonathan Banks kind of just like...
I think he just refined a lot of things.
Yeah. He just took him back a few years.
Yeah.
Where he'd gone stale, he just brought him back to kind of like what Buddy McGirt's been saying about Kovalev.
Yeah.
Instead of changing him, he, you know, they've become so reliant on just being a knockout puncher and having that reputation that that's all they look for. So, you know, they're just loading up big shots, single shots, single shots.
Yeah.
Where you just need to go back to more of an amateur style, more of a boxer style.
Right.
So, you know, just kind of be clever, you know, to get that, to be able to get to so many fights, you know, 37, 38, 39 years old, just need to be, you know, more clever in what you do instead of just loading up, wasting a lot of energy just on those big shots.
No, you're right. I think it was more like if people were going to watch this in terms to see how he looked under Jonathan Banks, like, okay, is he going to look that much different now that he's left the trainer that he was with since like he came to the States in 2011, something like that. But, you know, if you were watching this fight to look for drastic changes in his fight game, that, you know, that was the wrong mindset because he's already essentially a veteran in the sport. He's not the type of fighter at this point in his career where you're going to change his style. So, you know, there wasn't anything like if you're not really like a boxing fan, then you're more of a casual fan and you watch this fight like, oh, OK, you know, he nothing different. But, you know, if you're a, you know, a boxing fan and hardcore fan, essentially, you can kind of see, like you just mentioned, the minor details that, you know, he kind of worked on and. You know, that corkscrew punch, I mean, he hasn't done that in years.
Mm.
So, you know, I think Jonathan Banks knows that regardless in terms of he came into this camp replacing Abel Sanchez. And I think he already had the mindset, look, I'm not going to change this guy's game totally. The style he has already been effective. It's been working regardless if he's had some controversial decisions the last couple fights. So I think he just refined him. And I think one big thing, too, that he did for him because he, like we mentioned it a couple minutes ago, that he did look leaner because I noticed that.
Mm.
I noticed that, especially at the weigh-in. Jonathan Banks gave him, I think, a nutritionist this time. And for the past several years, he's never really had. Abel Sanchez has always handled like the strength and conditioning, the food and all that stuff. And with Jonathan Banks, I think he added all those different pieces to that puzzle. Because if you remember in past interviews, Triple G and Abel Sanchez would even say, yeah, he can eat whatever he wants. You know, he can eat whatever he wants. And the hard work is done in the gym. I mean, I get it. But it worked for him. You know, it worked for him. But this camp, at least if I'm remembering correctly, he had a nutritionist. So they made him all these like specific type of meals to cut weight. You know, these healthy meals and stuff like that at certain parts of the day. I would think that makes a big difference, right? Because I mean, like when you're trying to like get lean or lose weight, working out isn't just like, you know, the main thing you're going to focus on, even though it's a big part. Dieting and all that stuff is a huge part, probably even more than working out. What do they say? Like 80% diet, 20% working out.
Yeah, you always say that. Then you know what? You can't outwork a bad diet.
Yeah.
So, you know, and instead of, you know, if you've got a good diet, like he obviously did for this camp, you don't get to those last final days where you're trying to cut 7-8 pounds of water weight from your body. And then you're going into the fight, you know, dehydrated, lightheaded, you know, you're not 100%. So I think it was a good idea to do that. Obviously, you know, he's getting on there in his career. So I think the change of camp so far, you know, just after that one fight and just, you know, looking at him aesthetically, I think he looks very good.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he looked fine. You know, there wasn't anything drastic that was changed. That punch that knocked out Rolls, that it was like that straight left. It was kind of like Rolls was already kind of tipping to his right, and then Triple G kind of catches him with that left and kind of just sends him even more and falls him. He face planted. I was like, oh man, he's done. He literally face planted, and then he kind of like wakes up 3-4 seconds later. He's like, oh crap, where am I? I mean, that was a hard shot, but I mean, like, it wasn't, at least from the angles that we had, it didn't seem like it was that crazy of a shot. Like, it wasn't like Kanadi had all his force behind it. You know, he kind of had to lunge forward and tap him.
Yeah, he didn't, like, load up on it, but...
But it was just enough, like...
Just a heavy-handed fire,
yeah.
Isn't he?
No, yeah, he's just a heavy-handed fire, and you got to think about it in terms of Rolls hasn't fought the elite fighters that Kanadi's fought over the years, of course. You know, the resumes are drastically different. So, you know, a guy like Canelo or something like that, or Jacobs could take a punch like that. But, you know, there's levels to this, like we've said.
I have a useless stat for you. That was Triple G's first non-title fight since 2010.
That's a lie, and you know it. I don't believe it. Actually, no, I believe
9 years.
He's the long. Yeah, what did they say? He's the longest unified champion in history. I didn't know that. They kept saying that on the DAZN broadcast, and I was like, I gotta fact check that. But I'm going off of their commentary that he's the I think I remember that correctly, the longest unified champion in history. I believe. If I'm wrong, please don't hate me. But I think that's what they were saying. That's actually a pretty big accomplishment.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive.
But you know. Of course, he calls out Canelo for the third fight, which I think will happen.
Yeah, did you see Oscar De La Hoya's tweet that he put afterwards?
Yeah, yeah. You know, he tweets. Like,
get a bell and come back to us. Yeah, Canelo's your daddy or something like that.
You know what, though? The thing that was funny. I mean, I get it. It's promoting the fight, publicity. They're just adding spice, adding fuel to the fire, in a sense. But I just thought it was kind of funny that Oscar De La Hoya tweeted that. He said, oh, fight somebody better, win a belt, and then maybe, and then this is the key word I focus on, and maybe I'll consider giving you the third fight or something like that. I'm paraphrasing. I don't know if that's the exact tweet, but it was around that. And then the hashtag you put, Canelo is your boss. But he says, and maybe I'll consider giving you the third fight. And then he puts, Canelo is your boss. And it's like, wait a minute, you just said, I'll consider giving you this third fight, but then you said Canelo is your boss. So is Canelo going to give the okay and then you're going to get the fight? I just thought it was kind of funny. It was kind of like, what if you just put we instead of I, you know?
I think it's going to be all down to John Skipper, personally.
Oh, yeah. You don't, I mean,
he's signing those checks. So.
Yeah. I mean, you don't think that Skipper John Skipper, which is he's if, for people who don't know, John Skipper is the head of DAZN. He's like the president or CEO or something like that. Mm-hmm. He was formerly at ESPN. He was, you know, so he knows his stuff. But yeah, I mean, you don't think they signed guys like Canelo and Triple G, of course, like saying like, look, we're paying you all this money. With all the money they're paying Canelo and saying we have to get the biggest fights. They're a new platform. They need the views. Their biggest publicity was last week, mm-hmm. the Joshua Ruiz fight. I'd like to see how many followers they got across social media, how many subscriptions they got on YouTube because of that, because that got picked up everywhere, and it helped because it was a heavyweight title fight. Because, I mean, we all know in the sport, heavyweight boxing is just different from the rest of the weight classes.
It probably got more views than it would have done if Joshua had won.
Oh yeah,
because it was such a big surprise.
Yeah. I firmly believe that if Joshua would have won, it wouldn't have got near as publicity.
And they'll want the Canelo and Triple G 3 fight because I'm sure that, you know, if they do that, they're going to say, where else can you get Canelo, Joshua,
yeah.
Triple G, Canelo V, Triple G in yeah. the space of, what, May to September? So in 5 months, this is what you've had all for $10 a month, $20 a month, each yeah. month to month.
Or like $100 for the whole year or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. So they're going to, that's what they want to do, you know, since they've been opening around a year. They need those big fights. The only reason they got Canelo and Triple G was to create that third fight.
Right.
So they don't want anything getting in the way. Look what happened to Joshua. They didn't expect him to lose to Ruiz.
No, right.
So they don't want to wheel Canelo out against Callum Smith, say, and then, you know, he gets caught, loses. Or
I would love to be a fly on the wall like that Monday after Ruiz beat Joshua, or at least that week after Ruiz beat Joshua with, you know, this last week and a half or whatever. Because like I mentioned, yeah, of course DAZN would want Joshua to win because he fights on their platform. But like you said, Joshua winning wouldn't have gotten the same publicity with Ruiz winning. Like nothing near that. And I would love to be a fly on the wall like on that, if they had like a meeting in the aftermath in terms of, okay, like, you know, Joshua's gonna get the rematch, so hopefully like he gets the belt back or the belt's back. But we got a ton of press and a ton of publicity. Our stuff was all over the place, all across the world because of this, you know? So it's kind of like, you know, I'm trying to think of an analogy to say it, but in terms of that, I'm trying to say like they kind of benefited in a sense from both sides. Like, well, yeah, their guy didn't win, but they got a ton of press. And if they were already like solidified, like, in the sport, like Fox, Showtime, and stuff like that, they've already been in the sport of boxing for years. Yeah, it would still help, but like they'd be like, oh well, you know, it doesn't matter. We already have our fan base and stuff like that. But they're a brand new service. They're a brand new sporting streaming service, and they got
just to the US though.
Right. No, I mean, right.
They've been in like Italy and Asia.
No, yeah, but like everybody comes to the US for money. You know, that's why. That's what people have asked us, you know, people have asked me before, but I'm pretty sure you've gotten this question, is that, oh, how come all the big fights happen like in Vegas and stuff like that, like in front of like 20,000 people at T-Mobile Arena, when you could come to like Wembley Stadium and sell out 80 to 100,000 people? How are you not going to make more money over there? You make more money over here. It's fighting in front of 20,000 people, 15,000-20,000 people, than fighting over there in front of 80 to 100,000 people.
Well, the casinos bankroll it, don't they?
Yeah. And I mean,
because they know that, you know, was it, for example, when Mayweather didn't go to jail and they let him, you know, stay out for those 60 extra days for the Pacquiao fight?
Yeah.
They said that it brought, $1 billion in revenue to the strip. So the MGM, you know, paying an extra 20, 30, 40 million into the pockets, it's win-win.
Yeah.
Because the casinos know that, you know, they're going to have to pay for rooms. They're going to drink. They're going to gamble. They're going to do this. They're going to do that. So that's why, and the taxes are also less in Vegas.
Yeah,
that's why
there's no state tax. So
that's why a lot of the fights go there.
Yeah, yeah. So if you don't live in the United States, we have our federal government and we have our state governments, local governments, stuff like that. The federal governments have taxed everything. But there's some states like Nevada, Las Vegas, Nevada, that don't have state tax. So that's why a lot of fights happen in Vegas. One, because there's a ton of casinos. It's entertainment. There's a ton of money that flows through that area. And two, because there's no state tax. So the money you make over there from your purses, the fighters' purses, the promoters and stuff, you get to keep more of it.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if you fight in California, if you fight in LA, there's a lot of buzz out here. There's a lot of publicity, Hollywood and stuff like that. So, you know, there's pros and cons to it, but there's federal tax and state tax in California. So you're going to get less money in that check.
It's like 30%, isn't it, I think?
I don't even know.
It's high when you add them up. It's like 28 to 30% you lose.
It's high. So, you know, that's why people. That's why fights happen like in Texas, because Texas is the same thing as Nevada, Las Vegas and stuff like that. So, you know, he calls out Canelo, and then honestly, like, if I was Triple G, I wouldn't even have called out Canelo. Like, I know he's getting all these questions, but I would just kind of leave it. Be like, because, I mean, Canelo's never really been, like, it just makes Canelo, like, be even more solidified as the bigger star. Because, like, you're calling him out. Like, and I get it. There's always that one marquee fighter that doesn't do the call-outs. Like, everybody calls him out because he's a moneymaker and he's a talent. It was Mayweather for the longest time. And now it's been Canelo. And I think, honestly, like, if I was Triple G in his camp, like, I wouldn't even mention him. Be like, oh, yeah, you know, if I get the fight, I get the fight. I'd like to avenge it, but, you know, it is what it is. You know, I think Triple G's he's been at that echelon where he doesn't have to call anybody out. Like, I get it. He makes the most money with Canelo. But it's like, you know, maybe the zone was pushing the narrative.
It's funny that Canelo, if you think about it, is such a big marquee name. He doesn't have that persona, you know, where Mayweather had that persona. McGregor has a persona. Canelo doesn't really call anybody out. He's quite quiet, to be honest with you. He doesn't really speak does he do any interviews in English? Very rare.
No, very rare. Yeah.
You know, and he's still.
But he understands English.
He's still probably top of the game.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, you know, people calling him out just solidify him as the biggest star,
mm-hmm.
you know? And which is, I mean, he's earned it. You know, he's fought Triple G the last two times and he fought Jacobs. Like, he's been in some tough fights, honestly. Like, you know, people talk about pound for pound and stuff like that. Like, you know, people are like, oh, Canelo shouldn't be there, blah, blah, blah. Like, yeah, he should be. Like, he has a strong argument to be number one. And I get it. And
his last five fights, he'll be, what, Triple G three times?
Yeah.
Daniel Jacobs and then the Beast, Rocky Fielding.
Rocky Fielding, man. That solidified him as number one.
Yeah.
I saw a tweet today, and you know, if the person who tweeted this, I forgot who you are. I forgot what your handle is, but I glanced at it. It said, and I think I texted you about it, where they said, I was scrolling through Twitter earlier today, and it said, okay, now that Canelo and Triple G have gotten through their respective opponents the last year or so, or the last 9-10 months. Now it's time to give the fight fans the fight that they really want. And that's Rocky Fielding versus Steve Rolls. I was dying, man. I was dying when I heard that. But that was my laugh of the day right there. That was my laugh of the day. Because honestly, like, I think that would get some viewers, you know, just because, like,
yes,
it's intriguing.
Like a handful.
Yeah, you never know. You never know, man. You never know. But yeah, Canelo, Triple G 3, September. What do you think?
I think it'll go ahead. I think, like we touched on, I think DAZN, Oscar can say what he wants. He signed a contract. Triple G signed a contract. And I think that DAZN, John Skipper, are just going to tell him, like, hey, guys, we want it now. We need to get those. We're paying you top dollar. We need to get those subscriptions up.
No, you're right. You're right. And if you think about it, I think it's going to be announced in the next probably 3 weeks.
September 14th, it should be.
Because usually they announce it like about 2.5-3 months out, like a prominent fight.
Yeah, because they're obviously going to do the press tour.
Yeah, they're going to do a press tour and stuff like that, or at least a minor press tour. I don't think they're going to do a big one again. They'll probably just do it in one city. But I think we're going to hear something in the next 3 weeks probably, maybe 3-4 weeks. 3 weeks, I say. Within that window, you're going to hear who Canelo fights next for sure.
Yeah, because you're going to do the press. They want the hype.
Yeah. Yeah. So is it going to be Canelo Triple G 3? It's likely.
I would be surprised if it wasn't.
Yeah, it's likely. But
I think all the usual obstacles that are going to be in the way, I think they're both centered to zone.
Oh, yeah.
John Skipper's going to demand it. I think there's going to be... it's going to be huge if Oscar tries to dig his heels in and say, no, what's Triple G bringing to the table? I'm wondering, you know, whether Oscar's saying that and saying he has no titles because he wants Canelo to be the A-side. You know, he's going to be difficult and say, you know, he's walking out second. He wants our music. We want to be on this side of the poster. You know, all the usual stuff that they try to do to, you know, make him the A-side and him the B-side.
Right. No, yeah. I mean, but it happens in every time somebody brings up that conversation that, you know, like, oh yeah, the A side, B side, blah, 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 I always think back to the HBO boxing face off between Sergio Martinez and Miguel Cotto. I don't know if you remember it, but Max Kellerman was like in the middle doing this thing. And then Sergio Martinez was the middleweight champion in that fight. But Cotto was the A side. So Cotto's name was like first. He was introduced second. Now, Cotto was the moneymaker. And during that face-off, they kept saying, like, Cotto kept saying, side A and side B, I'm side A, I bring in the tickets, and they kind of go back and forth. He's like, I fill the stadium. I put the butts in seat. He's like, I think he tells Martinez, how many times have you fought at Madison Square Garden? And then Martinez is just like, oh, none. He's like, I fought there like 9 times or something like that. He's like that, and he's pretty much telling him that's how the business works. Like pretty much saying it doesn't matter about the belts. He's like, I bring the money. And then Martinez took it kind of as an insult, where he's just like, oh, he's calling me a class B fighter. And then Cotto jumps in. He's like, no, that's not what I said. And then he tells Max Kellerman, he was like, do you get what I'm saying? I'm not calling him a class B fighter. He's like, I didn't say that. He's like, I just said he's the side B from like a money standpoint. He's like, I didn't say he was class B. And then Max Kellerman kind of differentiates that to Martinez, saying, do you understand what he's saying? He's not calling you class B. He's just saying you're side B in terms of money. And then Martinez kind of ignores it and goes on to the next topic. But that's how I always look at it, because I've heard people have like, oh, you know, class B and stuff like that. It's the moneymaker, whoever the moneymaker is.
Well, you know, Cotto lived by that rule, didn't he, really? The belts don't matter because he dropped, was it the WBC? Because he didn't want to pay the sanctioning fees?
Oh, yeah. I don't know. What was the number they were throwing around at that time?
I think it was like 400,000 of his purse.
Yeah.
Because it's like 9%, 10% or whatever. And he was like, hell no, and just dropped it.
I don't know, man. I just think it's funny that, like, I think the IBO recently, they were trying to sanction a fight for their belt or something like that, or one of their champions was going to defend it or something. I forgot what it was, but it was a couple months ago. And that whatever that belt, that fight was, I think it was supposed to be in the UK or something. At first, they announced that it was going to be for the IBO, and then they, you know, sometime later they said that it wasn't. Somebody tweeted at who's the president of the IBO? Levine,
yeah.
Right? Ed Levine.
Yeah, I believe so.
And they tweeted at him like, "Hey, I thought this fight was for the IBO, and I forgot what fight it was." They're like, "What happened? You know, they're not advertising anymore or anything." And then he responded and said, "Oh, we couldn't come to an agreement on the fees." And I was like, "Dang, really?" Like, pretty much just throwing it out there, like, "Oh, we couldn't come to an agreement on money." Like, what? Like, I get it. Like, they're their own separate entities, and you have to pay for the fight for the belts, because this isn't like the UFC where you know, it's all one big conglomerate. There's pros and cons to both sides of that argument. But I just thought it was funny. I was like, dang, really? It just said, oh yeah, we couldn't come to an agreement.
If you go on a lot of the websites, you can actually see how much the sanctioning fees are. They don't hide it. I think the WBC, you can't find it, but I think IBF, IBO, if you go onto the websites, you can actually see it, and it's like a certain percentage of the purse.
See, but like, regardless if people agree with that or not, if they're transparent on that and they put it like on the site, like saying, look, regardless of what it is, we do 2%, 2.5% or whatever. It doesn't matter if you're $100, $100 million, like 2.5%. You know, but if you're not posting it or you have no uniform rules, like you literally go into it like as a business, it's like, man, that's kind of sketchy, man.
At the WBA?
I mean, yeah, I don't know, man. It is what it is. It is what it is. You know, if you want to be in the game, that's what you're going to have to just adapt to.
It's cloak and dagger, isn't it?
It is. It's cloak and dagger. Absolutely. Or like before the first Canelo Triple G fight was made, I think after he fought after he beat Chavez or something. I remember Canelo said in a post-fight interview, he was just like, he was like, you know, forget the belts for this fight. He was like, we're putting those to the side. We don't care about the belts. We're going to fight for honor and glory. Like, and I remember he said in subsequent interviews after that, he's like, yeah, I don't care about the belts. He like, because it's true. In this sport, and even in UFC, any combat sports especially, when you become such a superstar and you bring in the money, that supersedes any belt that you have. It really does. I mean, having the belts is just going to make you more legitimate and stuff and, you know, be announced as a current middleweight world champion. But when you're the moneymaker, you know, I'm sure if you, I think Mayweather's even said that in interviews where he's just like, yeah, like, you know, you just, that's the world championship that everybody wants to have. That's that title. I'm sure if you ask every fighter, hey, would you rather be, and maybe I'm wrong, I don't know, we might get hate for this, but I mean, like, what do you think if you asked, you know, 20 fighters from amateur to pro, veterans or whatever, all in between, if you asked them, would you rather win world titles your whole life and, you know, you make a decent living and stuff like that, or win, you know, maybe one world title, but you become such a superstar that you make a ton of money over your career, but you never fight for a belt. You know, I mean, you're always going to fight for some time. Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, I know what you're trying to say. I think it's hard because I think, you know, once you get to that Mayweather status and you've already won the titles and you've held so many of them, then you can just go on and fight for glory and stuff like that. But when you're coming up and you've never held that, you know, the green and gold, the WBC title that everyone, I imagine, you know, you picture Muhammad Ali and all those guys back in the day, that's the kind of, they're probably the most prominent, the number one that everyone wants to hold. So I think, I'd like to think that people come up and they want to fight for glory and stuff like that. You know, obviously there's always a motive for money.
Right.
But
I mean,
it's hard to say. I'm sure it's a mixture depending on who you speak to.
Oh yeah. I mean, everybody obviously wants to make a living, but I'm sure, you know, there's people like, no, I want to win world titles. Because I mean, like you still want to be able to solidify your legacy. So, but you know, it is what it is. But moving on that card, damn, we talked about that fight for a while. I mean, it was the main event. It was Triple G. He's a prominent.
Biggest fight of the weekend.
Yeah, biggest fight of the weekend. Sixth round TKO. Is it Israel?
Israel Madrimov, I believe.
Madrimov gets the TKO in the sixth round and improves to 3-0. Over Noberto Gonzalez.
Pretty dominant performance by him. And Steve Kim spent the week at Joe Diaz's gym before the fight. And he's put a tweet out saying that Joe Diaz had said that Israel was the biggest talent he's had come through the gym.
No way. Really? That's a pretty big statement.
That's a pretty big statement from someone like Joe Diaz.
That's a pretty big statement. Because he's had guys like Desert Storm, Timothy Bradley.
Virgil Ortiz.
Well, Virgil Ortiz is... Is he still with Joel Diaz?
No, he's with Robert Garcia. Yeah.
Oh, wow. I didn't expect that.
Big praise.
That's big praise. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we'll see. You know, still very early in his career. I'm pretty sure we're not going to be able to see him, you know, in prominent fighters for at least maybe 10 more fights. So he's only 3-0. But let's see. Let's see how it lasts. I'm going to have to keep an eye on him. And then also on that card, Nikita, what is it? Abibai? How do you say that? How do you say that, Mike?
I would say it the same.
Oh, forget it. I'm not going to say these Russian names anymore. I feel like I insult our Russian fans, our Ukrainian fans. Improves to 5-0. First round KO over Juan Francisco Lopez Barajas.
It was a good fight whilst it lasted. Just came in, big body shot.
They were both undefeated too.
Yeah. Just measured him. You could see he was watching him, waited till he committed, big body shot, and actually dropped him twice with the same shot. Dropped him. He got up at, I think, around 8 and then went down again. It's had a few first round knockouts so far. So, you know, they don't get paid for overtime, as they say. So get him out as quick as you can.
And then there was also one more on that card that I wanted to touch on. It was one of Triple G's fighters. Ukrainian kid.
The one begin with M, Madrimov.
No, it wasn't him. It was it was a Ukrainian kid, like Ali something. Is it Ali? You know what I'm talking about? Ali's. He's one of Triple G's fighters. Because I remember Tom Loeffler. I wouldn't even call him Triple G's promoter anymore. Is he still a promoter? Is he on the team? I don't know. Tom Loeffler was talking about him a lot and saying that, you know, this is the next guy to you know, be a superstar and get some fights in and stuff like that.
Ali Akhmadov?
That's what it is. Yeah, I knew it was Ali something.
14-0, TKO round 3.
Yeah.
Against Marcus McDaniel, who was 15-0 when defeated.
Yeah, I thought that was a good performance by him. Because, like, I made sure to watch that because, you know, Loeffler and some other people were mentioning him. Like, oh, yeah, keep an eye on this guy. He's one of Triple G's fighters and stuff like that. I was like, okay. You know, it worked out. It worked out. So, you know, we'll see how he goes. But 14-0, he's already kind of high up there in terms of wins where he can probably get a semi-decent prominent fight in the next maybe 4 fights.
All of the Eastern European fighters, when they come over, you know, Triple G's, all the guys at Joe Diaz's gym, all the people that train with Lomachenko, just they fight so much as amateurs that when they turn pro, they just look completely different to the English fighters and the American fighters.
Yeah.
Because they've all had 200-300 amateur fights.
That's insane.
So, you know, it's quite normal now for them to be, you know, challenging for quite, you know, prominent belts with 10, 11, 13, 14 fights.
Yeah, like Lomachenko.
Exactly.
Yeah. And speaking of these Ukrainian Russian fighters, there's been a debate lately about how they spell all their names. You know, we talked about, we'll start with Lomachenko. Is it Vasily or Vasil? Do you spell it? I've seen it spelled V-A-S-Y-L and then V-A-S-I-L-Y.
And then Gennady Golovkin, when he...
Or I or something like that, not Y. And then now Gennady adds the I at the end, like right before the Y. He's like, oh, that's how you really spell it. And then I saw another one earlier today that said Alexander Usyk doesn't spell it with an O. He spells it with an A. And then there was other people saying, no, he spells it with an O. So I'm just like, what the hell? Like, what's with this spelling? I mean, I get it. Like, for Gennady Golovkin, it was marketing purposes because Tom Loeffler, you know, I mean, that makes sense. They did it more for marketing purposes when he came to the States. But, you know, we gotta know how to spell these people's names here, you know, especially when we're reporting on stuff and especially when we write stuff. So, but moving on. Also on that same night, actually, on ESPN, Oscar Valdez returned to defend his, what, he has a WBO featherweight title. He improves to 26-0 with a 12-round unanimous decision win over Jason Sanchez, who was also undefeated, suffered his first loss. Did you catch this fight? I was actually watching the DAZN card, but did you catch this? How do you think Valdez looked?
I was watching DAZN and then just had this on in the background, had the usual TV and laptop combo that we seem to have to do every weekend now. I was paying more attention to the DAZN card. I thought Valdez looked good. I thought you could see the change of camp to Reynoso. He had a little bit more head movement, you know, which is hopefully going to prolong his career since before he just had that, you know, as they claim, the typical Mexican style where he was just more of a warrior.
Yeah.
It was a good performance. You know, I think that's his second fight back since he broke his jaw against Scott Quigg. So, you know, in a recent episode of Carl Frampton's podcast, he said that when he signed with Top Rank, he'd been promised a fight with Valdez. So hopefully, fingers crossed, that's, you know, a fight we'll see.
Yeah.
That should be a real war.
I hope so, man, because like this, I feel like Valdez, like, you know, I get it, the Top Rank and all that stuff, but it's like, come on, man, like, these guys got to fight each other. These guys got to fight each other, all the champions, like, you know, what did Gervonta Davis tweeted out today, I think, or yesterday, today, saying, if I can't get, after this next fight where he's fighting in Baltimore in his hometown, he's like, if I can't get another world champion at 130, he's like, I'm moving up to 135.
I think he's going to need to. That's those pitches of him lately.
I'm kind of glad that he said that, though, because it kind of puts pressure on his promoter, PBC, Mayweather Promotions and stuff like that. In terms of saying, like, yeah, give me these other world champions, man. And honestly, like, at 130 pounds, I think Davis beats all of them.
I think it's one of his biggest problems is going to be on the scales.
Yeah.
He balloons up in between fights all the time. You know, that picture that his girlfriend put on the other day, he looked huge.
Yeah.
So it's just, how much is it going to take out of him, you know, having to boil back down to make 130? Because he's always been big for that weight. You know, he lost his championship once on the Mayweather-Conor McGregor undercard because he was overweight.
Yeah. So he still got a ton of exposure for that, though. But who's at 130?
Mikey's moved up, I think, now. Lomachenko.
But Lomachenko
floats between 130, 135.
Lomachenko has said that he's willing to move down to 130 if there's a significant fight. So, I mean, I don't know. These guys really need to figure out. Burchelt has a belt at 130, right?
Yeah, that'd be a good fight.
Gancio?
Navarrete?
Oh, yeah. Emmanuel Navarrete has a belt.
Tevin Farmer, that's the one that everyone's been talking about.
Tevin Farmer. Oh, yeah, they've been talking about Davis and Farmer for a long time.
The new champion, Jamal Herring.
Jamal Herring, that's right, recent champion. I mean, like, yeah, they all need to fight each other. But honestly, I think Davis, as long as he can make the weight, I think Davis is probably the best one in that division.
The one I would like to see would be the clash of styles, Tevin Farmer. Tevin Farmer and Davis, I think the smack talk before the fight would good.
Good publicity.
I think, you know, Tevin Farmer's your skillful switch hitting what southpaw, and then you've got Davis just a battering ram, really, you know, just heavy handed.
Yeah.
So I think that would be a good fight if they'd make it.
But put Valdez against, you know, going back to Oscar Valdez who fights at 126, put him against Leo Santa Cruz. Put him against Leo Santa Cruz like at the StubHub. You know how good they're both Mexican American fighters.
Bob Arum said afterwards, we're going to look for a fight later on in the year between Valdez and Carl Frampton. If Frampton is successful in his next fight.
But Frampton, I mean, they top rank, they signed Frampton to a couple fights, right?
Or something
like that. Mm-hmm. Like, honestly, like, I like Frampton, but like, you know, I don't want to see Valdez against Frampton.
I think that, you know, losing to Josh Warrington in the way that he did.
I don't know. I mean, he could still recover and come back, but the Warrington loss, I mean, why doesn't Valdez fight Warrington?
Well, you know, he fights next weekend, so maybe down the line he could do.
Well, I don't know why they just don't unify. You know, they're fighting a week apart. you could make that fight. Why are you going to fight Carl Frampton?
Who? Probably just because Frampton's got more of a name in the U.S.
But that'd be a unification fight.
Do you think if we stop someone in the street now, they'd know who Josh Warrington is? Probably not.
If you stop somebody in the street and ask him who Carl Frampton is, they probably wouldn't know who Carl Frampton is.
No, they would. They would.
No, they wouldn't. No, they wouldn't. And that's not an insult. We're not saying that like as an insult to these fighters. It's just, you know, it's the truth. Like, in comparison to, like, oh, you know who Mayweather is? But yeah. You know, the casual fans is where the money's at in combat sports, essentially, especially boxing. But I hope so, man. Like, Valdez and Santa Cruz, and even finding like a guy like Joseph Diaz or something. I know he moved up to 130. He's at 130 technically, but he was just at 126. But I don't know. I just these guys are all dancing around each other. But you know, it is what it is. And then also on that card, really quickly, Gabriel Flores stays undefeated, gets his 14th win, eight round unanimous decision over Salvador Breseño.
If that name rings a bell, it's because he was the youngest ever signee by a Top Rank.
What?
At 16 years old.
Are you serious?
From Northern California.
Are you serious right now? So Gabriel Flores, 79-73, 78-74 twice. 14-0. So he's already kind of high up there too with these wins.
He's one of those that's you know, selling out big crowds up north in Northern California, so I'm sure they'll, you know, they'll keep bringing him through. He's still really young. You know, don't, you know, give him too much too quickly, too young.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, signing to Top Rank at 16 years old. That's pretty good. You know, there's not many people who get into a big promotion at that age.
Yeah. And then backtracking a little bit. Last Friday, the 7th of June at the Turning Stone Resort and Casino in Verona, New York. How is it? Cletus Seldon? Gets the 11th round TKO over Zab Judah for the vacant NABA super lightweight title. I mean, I think the biggest story to come out of this was that Zab Judah you know, was hospitalized following this. What did he have? He had
A bleed on the brain. They've just released something today saying that, this afternoon he was released from hospital.
Yeah, he was released earlier today, you know, after suffering a small bleed when he got knocked out. And, you know, for quite a bit, for like about a day and a half or something, or, you know, a couple of days, you know, we didn't get any update. You know, people were saying, oh, you know, what's going on here? Hopefully it doesn't turn out bad.
It was scary because you were getting conflicting reports on what had actually happened to him.
Right, right. So there was conflicting reports, and it sucks, man. Regardless, you don't want to see any fighter go through something like that. But, you know, that's the nature of the game when you step between those ropes. I really hope he doesn't fight again, especially after something like this. You know, like, I think this is kind of like the wake-up call to him saying, hey, you know what? I think this is it, you know?
Let's hope so. You know, at 41 years old, they put him in the ring with a live dog in Clayton Sheldon. You know, is 24-1, has actually had like a lot of knockouts on his record. So, you know, a disappointing way to end his career. But let's hope that he's, you know, he's safe. Let's hope that he's doing well. His family's doing well.
No, right, right. I mean, yeah, whatever you thought about him in the past or something like that, if you liked him or not, like, you know, he is a professional fighter. He was in some pretty memorable fights, especially against Mayweather, you know. That whole memorable brawl that happened when he fought Mayweather. What was it, 2005, maybe 2006, around there, mid-2000s? And he was tagging Mayweather for the first couple rounds. But then Mayweather figured him out. But he was tagging him. He was.
That was probably when, you know, Jiu-Jitsu was in his prime. And back then, he was...
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
One of the top dogs in the division.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. So, you know, Judo's been in some memorable fights, you know, having, you know, almost 55 fights, essentially 60 fights or whatever. You know, he's been around the game for a long, long time. So, you know, the team here at the Last Round sends our prayers and our condolences and our well wishes to Team Zab Judah and Zab Judah himself. Hopefully everything turns out fine. But from recent reports, I think he's, like you said, he's been released, and, you know, that's a really good sign. So hopefully, you know, it's all stable and it all works out for him. And like I said, something like this, you might not want to go back into the ring anymore. So hopefully he's okay. This Saturday, you got another countryman fighting. You got, man, two prominent guys in like a month for you, man.
The Last Round will be there. We'll be ringside.
We will. We will. Actually, you will. But Tyson Fury makes his debut on ESPN, right? This is his first fight on ESPN from the MGM Grand Garden Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada. Goes up against your favorite or mine, Tom Schwartz. You know, we've been saying Schwartz for the longest time. I thought there was a T in there, but there's no T. It's Schwarz?
Schwarz? The German destroyer?
Sword? I don't know. So Tyson Fury's first fight since the draw against Deontay Wilder last December, who they're supposedly supposed to fight in early 2020. Fury says he wants to fight at least, you know, one more time after this, or maybe two more times. I don't know. At least one more time before the Wilder fight. So, I mean, we'll see. You never know. If Randy Ruiz can upset Joshua, what if Schwartz upsets Fury? What kind of world are we living in?
Oh, man, that'd be...
What kind of world are we living in where Andy Ruiz and Tom Schwartz are the lineal and unified heavyweight champions of the world?
That would be that would kind of show us the reason that we love boxing.
Oh, yeah. What did Larry Merchant used to say? The theater of the unexpected.
It's just stuff like that that's kind of why you love the sport. Just such unusual things, you know. Andy Ruiz being the poster boy now of the heavyweight division with the dad body.
Yeah, he's going to meet the president of Mexico this week sometime. So, you know, he's living in the moment right now. But I think Fury gets a decision. You know, he's not really a knockout artist. He's more of just like a bob and weave box kind of guy. So he's going to get the decision. He might try to knock him out. But
I'm thinking that he might try to knock him out. He looks in good shape. you know, the rumor is he's been doing really well in sparring and that he's been dropping a few of his sparring partners, but I don't know whether that's just stuff that people are trying to release.
Yeah, maybe it's just to build hype.
Yeah, to build the hype up. But I'm thinking he might go for the knockout just, you know, like you said, it's his first fight with the top rank affiliation with ESPN. You know, he's hoping to put something towards, you know, how, you know, Wilder's going in there with that fight after that big knockout. You're thinking that Fury's probably want to go in there with at least a stoppage against, you know, a lesser opponent, like someone like Tom Swartz.
Yeah.
You don't want to go in there with a boring 12-round decision, but the only problem is that's unfortunately the way that Fury fights.
Yeah.
I've grown up in the UK watching him for all those years, and, you know, when he fought the Klitschko the first time round, he wasn't really liked in England because of his boring style.
Yeah.
It's just that, you know, going to the top, having the almighty fall down to where, you know, he contemplates committing suicide to then rising all the way to the top again. That's
a comeback story.
It's a comeback story. You know, everyone loves that kind of the comeback, the underdog. And that's why he seems to now, the fans have turned on him and taken him under the wing. You know, he's one of us.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, you know, it is what it is. It's boxing. It comes and goes. But, you know, wrapping up that card, Sullivan Barrera and Jesse Hart are also facing off. That should be a pretty solid matchup.
That should be
a
good fight, yeah.
Michaela Mayer and Lizbeth Crespo are also on that card. This is on ESPN Plus, too.
I think it's on both, yeah. The undercard is going to be on ESPN, and then I think the main card is going to be on Plus. ESPN Plus.
So regular channel and then the app. And then also on ESPN Plus, is it the same day? Josh Warrington actually defends his title, his IBF World Featherweight title. I think you really like this fight. This is actually a good fight.
This should be a good fight. They don't really like each other. They fought each other as amateurs.
Kid Galahad
from the Dominique Ingle gym.
26-0 against 28-0. That's a... Somebody's O. Is it going to go?
Now...
Who do you got here?
See, this is a hard... I thought Lee Selby was going to beat Josh Warrington. And then when he beat him...
The theater of the unexpected.
Exactly. Then he goes in against Cal Frampton. And I was like, oh, Cal Frampton's going to school Warrington. So every time he steps up, I always... You know, I'd back his opponent, and Warrington always proves me wrong. But I'm thinking Kid Galahad.
I'm going with you then. I'm going with you.
You think so? I think Kid Galahad. I don't know whether this is just going to be a step too far. I think Warrington actually beat Galahad in the amateurs. But I'm just thinking that Ingle's style, you know, being able to negate, being able to switch, you know, orthodox to southpaw. I think he might just frustrate Warrington on the night.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking that Galahad might just take it on points.
We'll see. That's on ESPN Plus. So at the First Direct Arena in Leeds. So that's going to be an earlier probably fight, at least in the States over here in California.
Yeah, mid-afternoon.
Mid-afternoon. But, you know, once again, thank you for listening to episode 37. Of the Last Round, whether you're listening on the way to work, on a long car ride, at home, cooking, maybe you're on the toilet. Who knows? As long as you're listening, we appreciate it. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram, social media, all that stuff, at the Last Round 12, at the Last Round 12. Interact with us. Ask us some questions, who you want to be on the show, see what's up. And then, like I said at the beginning of the show, we apologize that Ronald Winky Wright could not be on this episode. You know, we did advertise him. So, you know, some logistics, some scheduling issues didn't work out. And he didn't call. He didn't call during the show. So I was kind of hoping, you know.
Blacklisted.
I was kind of hoping that he would call during the show. And maybe we could just throw
I blocked him,
there.
Danny. he had his one chance.
Mike got so mad at this that he blocked him. No, he didn't block him.
But, and don't forget to follow us at The Last Round 12 on Twitter and Instagram. We're going to be at the fights next week. Yeah. So any updates, any interviews we can get, any little snippets of news, we'll post on there. Photographs.
Movies. Anything. So once again, I'm Danny Z. For Mike Shepard, this is The Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This